And if you happen to be a guest, welcome. We're so delighted that you're here. We're glad that you, especially glad that you got to hear Amy's testimony of her mission trip. And I hope that you follow her. And I got to see some pictures that she posted along the way when she was there, if you follow her on Facebook. So it was great. But last week, some of you probably went home. And how many of you went home and you cleaned a closet last week? Anybody? No? Did you? Hey, throw our messy closet up there. Now, how many of you have, let's just a little confession time, right? Confession's good for the soul. How many of you have some kind of closet or, you know, drawer, something at home that kind of resembles that? Anybody? Okay. All right. Keep your hands up. Now, if that bothers you, go ahead and lower your hand. Okay, keep them up if it doesn't really bother you that much. Yeah, yes, right? Some people it's a drawer, you know, some people it's a cabinet, some people, you know, whatever. And I think we all, even the neat freaks, you know, and I didn't mean to say freaks with neat, because I kind of wish I was more like that. But now, how about this picture? How many of you think, when you see that, you think, man, whoever owns that closet, they need to go shopping? Yeah, okay, thank you. I see that hand. Thank you. God bless you. Yes, there you go. Predominantly female hands going up. What's with that? Maybe I'll change my... But we all have that. Now, let me tell you. If you've got a drawer, a cabinet, a closet, something that looks like that, that's fine. That's fine. No big deal. What really is the problem is when our lives look like that, when our relationships look like that, when our schedule looks like that, when our time looks like that. That's the problem, you know. But if you got a closet like that, that's fine. You know, you got to have a catch-all somewhere, right? But if your life looks like that, that's where the problem. So we talked about this breathing room, and the term breathing room isn't in the Bible, but the principle certainly is there. And we talked a little bit last week about one of the big Ten Commandments. And we defined breathing room simply this way. We said breathing room is the space between our current pace, you know, how fast we're going, how fast we're spending, how complex we've gotten our relationships all goofed up, and our limits. That's what breathing room is. That's how we're defining it. Because relationally, financially, and in terms of time, we all have limits. And when there's no space, you know, in that pace of life, in our limits, we have no breathing room. And we've just realized last week, too, just looking at some scripture, that life is better with some breathing room, isn't it? It's just better that way. When there's no breathing room, we saw that it adds stress, it adds anxiety. It also adds hyper-focus. Remember I said, you know, if I get to the very edge of this platform, it's like I have to pay more attention to that. And sometimes if we get so jammed, we have a few things perhaps that we just have to completely, keep focused on, and everything else gets excluded. Even important things get excluded because we're so focused on this. And relationships always suffer. Mom, you're always on the phone. Dad, you're always on the computer. You're always arguing about money. I hate coming home because you guys are always stressed out. I feel like that your body's here, but your brain isn't here. I remember when I first came to Hillside, actually, you may not know this, but this building used to not have any offices in it. The whole plan for the church was it was all Sunday school classrooms. So what's the toddler room was, you know, that was a classroom. The nursery was a nursery. But there was just one office. And so I did a lot of work at home. But I was, you know, new pastor trying to figure all this out. And kids come along. And I remember little Janelle coming in to my office at home saying, "Daddy, are you home?" You know, yeah, because it's like, well, here's my body. But I know what she meant, and you know what she meant, too, because you guys have you've lived that way. You know, but, you know, oh, you're not listening. You're so distracted, whatever. You know, again, your body's here. Your brain's not here, and you've all experienced that. When there's no breathing room in our schedule, in our finances, in our relationships, the relationships always take a hit. And it's easy to blame a lot of things, you know, but at the end of the day, we're created for that space. God made us that way. That's why we're sharing this. This isn't some idea. This isn't time management. This is simply, you know, now what's amazing, let me say this, what's amazing, whether you're a church person or not, whether you're a follower of Christ or not, maybe you're just trying to figure stuff out, the scriptures actually address this. And when God established the nation of Israel, they had no rules. You go, yay, no rules. Some of you teenagers, yay. No, that was a bad thing. Because really all they had was slave rules. They were coming out of slavery, so they didn't have a society yet. There weren't laws set up. And because they were really lived, they lived in a slave state. And that's all they knew was slavery. And then he decided, God gave him the commandments. He gave him 10 commandments, the 10 big ones. And there was also 600 other commandments around that he gave. And why so many? Because he's establishing a country, a new society. And God gave him, of course, the top 10, the famous ones. The ones that people tell you that they live by, but they can't recite. You know those ones, right? And in the top 10 rules, God gives, he commands them to take a day off. Wouldn't you like a boss like that? You go to apply for a job and they say, okay, first of all, the very most important thing is we got to make sure you get some days off. Right? Wouldn't you like to have a boss like that? But the fact of the matter is that God knew that's the way we were made. We needed that. And you have to love a God who puts right there in the commandments, take a day off. In the very beginning, God said, look, I've designed you to function best when there's room, when you have room to breathe. And so when the sun goes down for them Friday night, you stop working. You stop working for 24 hours. You lay down the tools. You don't pick up another grain. You don't pick up another grape. You don't pick another olive. You don't, you know, whatever your, you know, industry is, you set that aside. And when the sun goes down, you go home and rest. And you worship. And you spend that time with your family. And God's saying, it's my law. That's a law. Because I designed you to function better that way. It goes back to creation. God wasn't tired on the last day. He was setting up a pattern that would be true of all of us. Remember, we're made in the image of God? And God was saying, I'm giving you a pattern right here. I'm going to take this day off. And so life is way better when we have breathing room. So today we're going to talk specifically about our time, because we all have the same amount of it each day. You know, 24 hours, that's it. And our inclination, maybe yours isn't, mine inclination is to cram as much into it as we possibly can. Cram everything in to take nothing out. Our inclination is to do as much as we can, and sometimes we have such an inclination to do that, we don't really enjoy the stuff we're doing because we're trying to do everything, right? And how do you know? How do you know your time's going crazy? You say things like this. You say things like, oh, I might be 15 minutes late. I might have to leave a few minutes early. Honey, I'll be at your recital, but I won't be there for the first 6 or 7 songs. Hey, honey, exactly when do you play? Because really what I'd like to do is I'd like to step in, sit in the back, watch you play, say, oh, yay, wonderful, isn't that beautiful, and get out so I don't have to listen to the other 42 kids that I don't know and songs I don't like. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, so then I can go, when I get home, I can be able to say, honey, that was beautiful, that was marvelous, it was wonderful, I don't care about those other kids, but you were split back to you. And that's it, right? We've got ourselves going and fast this way, that way, and the fact of the matter is we drive too fast. I'm not going to preach. I'm not going to dwell long on that one, you know. You're driving fast. You're eating in your car. You're driving with a knee trying to talk and write and, what you know, right? You've seen it. Those of you who commute, you've seen some pretty amazing things. We could probably have a list of things that we have seen, you know, going along, you know. I see women doing their makeup, you know, doing their eye makeup. It's like, wow, text and drive. Just don't do your makeup, for crying out loud. But, yeah, that's right. But, you know, we're in a hurry. It's like, oh, dear, I'm so late. And we have all those kinds of things, and all those are indicators. And I don't eat in my car, and I don't do my makeup in my car. But other than that, I'm probably guilty of the rest of them. But you know what I'm saying? But we all have those times when we're just rushed. And then we have this, and perhaps all of you can, you know, all of you can have this, had this feeling. Have you ever been at work and really thought, wow, I really should be home? Or you've been at home and you think, wow, I probably should be getting some work done. You know, you're at work going, oh, I wonder what's going on at home. I'm at home going, oh, look at all this. I've left a pile at work, and I've got all these orders, got all this whatever, got all these people I should be calling, right? We're back and forth. I should be there. And it's like emotionally, we're not even where we are. The fact of the matter is that sometimes we do that to our kids, too. Our kids are running off in all different directions and going a bunch of different places. And maybe you're single. You know, we got a single section back there. Except Chris, what are you doing down here? Wife's sick, that's right. Okay, so he's hanging out with the singles. That's awesome. Yeah. But no, but those of you who are single, it's, you know how you feel guilty or you feel like you can't say no to stuff, right? Because if I say no, maybe they won't ask me out the next time, or maybe they won't, you know, maybe she won't say yes the next time, or whatever. You just feel like I'm going to miss out on something, so I just cram all of these things, and what am I going to do with this spare time? And then sometimes you get placed, and you go, why did I commit to that? I was already so exhausted, or I just came off finals, or why am I doing this? I'm wiped out. And then you're too afraid to back out, right? I can remember back, and I'm not picking on the singles, because I remember doing that so much. You know, I remember my parents begging me, why don't you just stay home and sleep for a night? It's like, oh, there's somebody to go see, you know. But so let's talk about how to solve that. Now, if you don't have that problem, well, maybe you're lazy. But that's a different sermon. That's a different message. That's a Proverbs thing. Okay, so, but maybe you are balanced. Maybe you say, you know what? I started this year, and I'm pretty well in the zone. I've really got this worked out well. Great. I'm going to help you keep from falling into a life without breathing room. All right? And now again, I want to say this is not a time management seminar, because usually those don't work because they're trying to sell you something, right? I'm not saying everyone. And sometimes that's good stuff. I remember going to a Franklin Covey seminar, and I got the Franklin thing, and I did that whole thing. I really didn't start really never forgetting anything until I electronicized myself. I remember with my Palm Pilot. I was cutting edge. Okay, I was cutting edge. Some of you, who are in your 40s like me. Wow, this is a rough group. But usually, right, they're trying to sell you something. They're trying to get you to see, hey, great, here's how to manage your time, but you'll need our booklet. You'll need our software. You'll need our whatever. So that's not what we're talking about. We're not going to talk about, in fact, I'm not going to give you a whole bunch of here's 10 steps to managing your time. We're going to look at one idea with one principle, with basically one application, and this is a little counterintuitive to me, but as I was looking at this scripture today, or this week, I just thought, this is where it's at, literally. Now, I know this is going to sound like preacher talk, but this could change your life, all right? So I'm not going to follow that up with send your money in and your donations, all right? This could change your life. This could really, really help you, because the fact of the matter is that you know this. Your time is your life, right? I mean, that's not, Proverbs talks about that, That's our life, how much time God gives us. We don't know how much time that is, but whatever that time is, that's how much life we have. And as your time goes, as your schedule goes, so goes your life. So we're going to get this big pearl of wisdom from none other than Moses in Psalm 90. And some of you are saying, wait, Moses? Well, first of all, Psalms, didn't David write the Psalms? Actually, this is a psalm that Moses wrote and is in the Psalms. And now you're thinking, Moses, what could he possibly tell us about time? Well, first of all, Moses lived to be 120 years old. Not bad. I mean, that's pretty good. So he saw a lot of life. What's a little sidelight, the Bible tells us, we really don't know exactly why. It's just kind of a little tidbit. It's kind of one of those things that makes me think, God wrote this because people wouldn't think to do this. It just happens to say that Moses, at an old age, could see really well. Kind of interesting, right? They just threw that in. Most of us, we reach 40, and it's like, 40. It's like, my arms aren't long enough. Do you notice that when you get to your 40s, your arms get shorter? You need them that longer? Something happens, but, or how about this one? We just need more light. You use that excuse? Yeah, that's the classic excuse. Yeah, we just need more light, right? So that's right. But it says Moses could see really well. And he's 120, and the Bible says, by the way, he could see really well. So that's good. But Moses lived kind of four different lives, four different stages of his life. The first stage of his life, he lived in Egypt, raised in Pharaoh's household. So he had it all. He had, all the luxuries, plasma TVs, got to have his own camel when he was 16, the whole thing. I mean, he had it all. He had the life of luxury. And then that stage ends because, well, he murders a guy and kind of falls out of favor with him. Parents, they're so picky. You murder one guy and they just throw a fit. But they throw him out and he's fleeing. So the second stage of his life, he becomes a shepherd. Now, talk about some slow days. Some of you have a bad, slow job. But talk about some slow days. Today, you take the sheep out, you sit, and you watch the sun go across the sky. Then you gather the sheep back, you bring them back to the pen, and the next day, you take the sheep out, you take them out, you watch the sun go across, and day after day after day. And some of you are going, yeah, that's about as exciting as my job. But so he has that for 40 years, okay? For 40 years, he's a shepherd. Now, what we have to remember is Moses doesn't know his own story. You know, he's thinking, okay, I'm going to be a shepherd the rest of my life. I'm going to die. You know, I'm going to watch these sheep till they die, and then I'm going to die. And my kids will, and my grandkids, they'll probably remember me. And then after that, nobody will really remember me. So, hey, no big deal. He had no idea that over, 3,500 years later, we'd be talking about him. He doesn't know his own story. Then there's that third part of his life, and that's when God calls him out of that shepherding. He says, I want you, Moses, to be my big guy in the middle, the very epicenter of what I'm going to be doing. I want you to go back to Egypt. You know, the whole let my people go thing, Pharaoh. I want you to let my people go. The river of blood, the signs, the wonders, the pestilence and plagues. And he's just basically God's mouthpiece. He doesn't even feel like he's very good at that, but God says, hey, you're going to do it. And next thing you know, he's in the controversy, in the very middle of one of the biggest events in world history. He faces Pharaoh down. Let God's people go. Well, then, as he begins doing that, he enters the fourth phase of his life, and that's when he's the leader of a nation. Sounds really great, only it suddenly involves wandering around the wilderness for 40 years with a bunch of complaining, whining people, and that doesn't look so great, until he gets right to the edge of the promised land. But then what happens? God says, sorry, you don't get to go in. You get to go up on a mountain and you get to see it. See, I gave you good eyesight, so you get to see it. But that's it. You don't get to go in. So Moses thinks, great. Raised in Pharaoh's home, then I have to go do the shepherding for 40 years. Then I Mr. Somebody for a while, right in the middle of all this activity. Now I get to wander around the wilderness for 40 years, and I get at the very edge of the promised land, and God says, you can't go in. And that's a story in itself about his disobedience and what led to that. But it's like, what? I mean, I'm Moses. What do you mean I can't go in? I just did all of this, and he doesn't get to do that. Well, I'd say a guy who lived all of that life and all of those different lives, in a sense, those different stages, I think he might have some perspective at the end of his life about what life is really like. And so we're going to look at Psalm 90, and he gives it to us in this context that we can really take this and put this in our everyday decisions of life. We really can. This is so applicable to us as it relates to time. In fact, you actually don't even have to be a Christian. You don't have to be religious or even believe in the Bible. By the way, if you're here and maybe you don't believe the Bible, let me just say, read it anyway. You say, I can't read the Bible, I don't believe it. What do you read that you do believe? Right? The internets? right now, you read it to see if it's true. So give the Bible a shot, read it. So let's see, maybe God will even show you something there. So anyway, why in the world would you look at this whole thing, Old Testament, Psalms, written by Moses, but there's an insight about time, and it's absolutely astounding. It's really stunning. I hope at the end of our time that it kind of motivates you to look at some more of God's truth in the Psalms. Sometimes we just go there for encouragement, but it gives some really, really great instructions. Now remember, this is Hebrew back to English. Okay, so some of this gets pretty tricky. But we'll look at it along the way, and at the end of this, he makes such a powerful, powerful point that I know will be of help to you. Psalm chapter 90, and it's there for you. If you're a guest, it's here on this. I've got it printed out for you. If you want to follow along, fill out the little blanks that we have for you. If that's distracting, just leave it, and everything will be displayed for you there. But you may want this to share with people later, but Psalm 90, starting at verse 1, it says, Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Now, he's talking about the nation of Israel, throughout all the generations we've lived within the context of who you are. And then he continues, before the mountains were born, cool imagery, huh? Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world. So he was obviously a creationist. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. He says, God, you know the arrows go both directions. You're all from all the past to you know, all the future. Somewhere in the middle, in the bookends of eternity, there's me. There's us. There's us as a nation. There's me, Moses. There's the nation of Israel, everlasting to everlasting, and somewhere in all of that, you know, here we are. Then Moses makes this incredible statement. You turned people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. That's like the greatest Gandalf statement, isn't it? You know, return to dust, you mortals. You shall not pass. Right? Okay. If you're not into Lord of the Rings, you're going, what is his problem? But anyway, yeah. Return to dust. I just love that. Return to dust, you mortals. Now, this might seem offensive to us and to our modern way of thinking. Because it's like, wow, suddenly God seems so mean and upset. And don't we say God is love? But this wasn't upsetting. This wasn't offensive to Moses. This was his way of saying that God controls the beginning and the end. That God controls and has input into every single day and moment of everyone's life, the whole world. Now, you and I struggle with this. It's like, okay, what do you mean? I mean, does God kill people then? Or does God decide how long people are going to live? Or does, you know, he just know how long everybody's going to live? And that's when he says, okay, you're done. You can't cross that over, even if you go to the gym and you eat right, whatever. That's it. That's the cutoff day. I don't know, honestly. That part, you reading it in the original language, you don't know what God is exactly saying with regard to time. He's got it. He knows it. He controls it. And what's important in this is that for most of us, whether we recognize it or not, whether we can explain it or not, because really, who can explain something like this very well? Most of us believe that God has something to do with the length of our lives. And I can prove that. For example, those of you ladies who have been married or married or have been married, you know what that's like, right? You know that there is a control. You want to have control of all of this. But then you know when there's those moments in time when you've lost control, right? You think, oh, everything's not going my way. But we all know that, we all sense that God has something to do with our length of days because, and I'll get back to that illustration in a second, but we know that God has something to do with the length of days because if you or someone you love was diagnosed with a terminal illness, right, you would suddenly feel inclined to pray. Whether you hadn't prayed in a long time or not, regardless of the fact, you know, of whether what you believe, you probably would say, oh God, you know, I've had people ask me to pray for people who told me that they didn't even believe in God, but they wanted me to pray. Because they somehow feel like there is something in our lives, that God is in control of the length of our lives. There's just something inside of us. Verse 4, he continues. 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. Now, a watch in the night is about 3 hours, and that was talking about the centuries. The soldiers would do a watch, and that was about 3 hours. And this is Moses' way of saying, God, you know how I keep saying, and some of you have said this, wow, how the time flies by. You ever said that? Imagine how time flies by. And Moses is saying, wow, if I say that, imagine how they fly by for you, speaking to God. The older I get, the more I feel that way. I've never heard a 4-year-old kid go, wow, time is just flying by, right? You ever heard, right? No 5th graders running around the playground. Well, my life's just zooming by. But as a 52-year-old, I'm going, whoa, this is going really fast. The older we get, the more we tend to feel that way. And Moses is saying, okay, I know, I'm a pretty old guy, and I feel like, wow, whew, there it goes. Now we take God, who's from everlasting to everlasting, how it must fly by to you. 1,000 years? Feels like 3 hours. Boom, there it goes. Imagine that kind of feeling. For me, it's like, wow, here comes a year, zoom, there it goes. And God's like, there's 1,000 years, zoom, there it goes. That's what he's saying. God from everlasting to everlasting. So Moses is stepping back and saying, so if that's your perspective, how long does my life look? Right? If 1,000 years is like 3 hours, what are we, like 6 or 7 minutes? I don't know. I didn't do the math on that. But wow. And there's a part of him, I'm sure, like you, thinking, am I really significant? I mean, I know God loves me, and I know he's everlasting to everlasting, but wow. Verse 5, yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death. They are like, and now he's talking about you and me. They're like the new grass of the morning. Oh, a little baby's born. It's so great. He's so cute. No, you know, they have their whole life ahead of them. In the morning, it springs up new, but by evening, it is dry and withered. He says, it dies. He says, God, I guess from your perspective, our long life, and he's going to say in a little bit, we have 70, 80 years, you know, Moses got 120. He has more perspective than us. I guess from your perspective, our entire lives that we're so concerned about, that we're so stressed out about, I guess from your perspective, it's just like grass that pops up. We have a great view of hills from our house, and we watch the colors change. And it's almost like you don't notice it when one day you're just looking out, and all of a sudden in the springtime, oh, it's green. And then it seems like one day you'll look out, and wow, it's brown again. It's just so quickly. And that's what he's saying. He says our lives kind of feel that way. Isn't this exciting and motivating? Aren't you just stirred? Aren't you just happy now? Okay, hang on. It's going to get worse. Better. He says, skipping to verse 10, our days may come to 70 years or 80 if our strength endures, yet the best of them, talking about the best of our years are but trouble and sorrow. Now, see, if you've had a lot of trouble and sorrow in your life, Moses is going to say, okay, now let me tell you my story, okay? 40 years, keeping sheep out there. Then, you know, God says, okay, go be the big guy. Let my people go. Yeah, 40 years wandering around in a circle with a bunch of complaining people to get to the Holy Land, to be all excited for then God to say, oh, by the way, you don't get to go in. Now, what's your story? And we'd say, okay, you win, Moses. that's really a bummer. And he goes, yeah, seriously, I know. It's like, why would you even believe in God, Moses? And he's saying, oh, wait. Don't let the fact that you're dwarfed by your own circumstances or that you're dwarfed by your own time, don't let that make you believe that God isn't loving and caring and wanting to be with you and help you. Look at this, talking about the years. For they quickly pass and we fly away. His point, time, life passes quickly. Now, this next verse is a little confusing, and I'll read it, and then I'll explain it to you. It's a little tricky. It's pretty tricky Hebrew, but it's tricky in English. It says, if only we knew, if only we could understand, if only we could it could embrace, could comprehend, if only we knew the power of your anger, your wrath, we don't like that word, your wrath is as great as the fear that is your due. Now, as you look at that, it looks like a poorly constructed sentence with three different ideas and maybe some words dropped out in the middle, right? And this is a very difficult Hebrew verse to translate into English, and a lot of English translations take a shot. This one, I mean, I looked at this. This is a very good one. This is NIV right here. This is a really good translation. It's as good as it gets. So let me tell you what it means. Here's the idea without going word for word. Here's what he's saying. He's saying if we could see God as he is, we would give him the reverence that he is due. If we could really, really see him. Because you think, wow, anger, wrath, that sounds, wow, that's, I don't want to see any of that. He's saying, no. If you could see God in all of it. Because the truth is, I like to focus on the God is love part. You know? I did my first master's thesis was on the subject of anger in the Bible. And I looked at every single verse that had anything to do with anger, angry, wrath, rage, and all of them. Over 400 references to anger in the Bible. Most of them are contributed to God. We can learn a lot from the way God gets angry, because he gets angry about the right stuff and in the right ways. Me, not so much. But here's what Moses is saying. You're everlasting to everlasting. I'm like a piece of grass. Here today, gone tomorrow. My life is like Zoom. It just goes by so fast. But if I think it's going fast, my life isn't even like a fraction of a second compared to how God looks at it. Because to you, 3 hours is like 1,000 years. So Moses pauses here for a second, looks at this big, grand explanation, and says, wow, if somehow, God, I could see you for who you really are, if I could see God as he is, then when it comes to our time in life, we give him the reverence. We'd be drawn to worship. We'd be drawn to commitment because I only have this little tiny little itty bitty slice of time to do something with. Wouldn't it be rational? Wouldn't it be the logical thing to do to be somehow take my little itty bitty blip of life, my little blip of existence, and give it to God? Wouldn't that make sense? Here's another way you can kind of personalize and read it. If we could see God as he is, we would be more careful with the time we have been allotted. If we saw God for who he really is and realized, hey, he gave us life, it's all in his hands, he's everlasting, we're here today, gone tomorrow like the grass, then we'd probably rethink what we did with this amazing, amazing gift called time. It's limited. I changed my message, if you get the email. I was just going to call this time. But then I got an email, and it said it was a sale for a limited time only. And I thought, that's my life, right? That's our lives, limited time only. We don't have it. And it takes Moses to kind of push us back into to look at the context of our life, and we think, the context is my life, is my life. And Moses says, no, the context of your life is everlasting to everlasting. Now put your life in that perspective. It's good to pause, I think, every once in a while and contemplate the brevity of life. I'm not talking about getting depressing. This isn't depressing. God doesn't want it to be depressing. Because he's about to say, in the contemplating the brevity of life and contemplating the fact that your time is limited, it will really indirectly and eventually directly impact what you decide to do with your time. So Moses comes now to the application. Here's what he kind of draws the line, and he says this. This is his prayer. This is his application. Teach us, he said, teach us, because we don't do this naturally. Teach us to number our days. Or another way of saying this is teach us to live as if our days are numbered. See, as we live, we live sometimes as if we're going to live forever, right? We spend our time as if we always are going to have our kids. We spend our time as if we're always going to have our spouse. We're always going to have our job. We're always going to have our parents. We're always going to have our opportunities. We spend our time as if our time is limited. And we all know that intellectually. We know it's not, but in terms of how we schedule, we just try to cram and jam and whatever we can do. We don't prioritize as if our days are numbered. And Moses says, that's a huge mistake. You need to learn to number your days, which means learn to live as if your days are numbered. Now, you've done this before. I went back to that illustration of something you can't control. You know, you have situations in our life. But again, you ladies that have ever been married, okay, you have done this. You can't control how everything goes, but you have numbered your days, right? It's the time between you said, I will marry you, and I do marry you. There's this amount of time. We don't know how much that is for each person. Probably was a different amount, right? But you had planning to do, and you knew that there was just a certain number of things you had to do, and there was a certain number of time, and eventually you weren't going to have any more days because you were going to come to that point where your life would end. I mean that time would end. Called your wedding day, right? And you crossed that line, and that was it. You numbered your days. Those of you who are students, remember, or you remember back, remember there was a few of us who did this. Remember, exam or finals, you knew, okay, 2 weeks, finals. That's I've got to make sure that I get this all done. 1 week left. Okay, I've got to study. I've got a presentation. If you had a presentation at work, you've got a certain amount of time. Okay, and the numbers are days. It's chiseling away, and there it goes. I've got this deadline. And what'd you do? You numbered your days. I remember when my kids were little, they would make chains, sometimes for Christmas, right? And they would take one off for different events. You ever done that? Maybe a paper chain, and you take one off, you know. Or maybe when you were in the jail cell, you know, you were going like that. No, that none of you. But right, we've numbered. How many more days do we have left? And you knew eventually that time was going to run out. There'd be a point which you would no longer have any time to prepare. So Moses says, what if we lived that way? This isn't depressing. This is reality. This will actually help you do a better job, as we're going to see in just a minute of this. Teach us to number our days. And here's the promise. Teach us to number our days. That why? And this leads somewhere. This goes somewhere. And here's the result. We may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach us to live as if our days are numbered, because in living as if our days are numbered, we'll gain wisdom as to what we should put in there, as to what we should leave out, as to what goes in our schedule, what should be our priority, right? If you live as if your days are not numbered, you'll continue to fill your days with stuff that you'll one day regret. You say, how can you say that with so much passion? I've done that. I've looked back on stuff. Why did I do that? Why did I spend so much time doing that? But when we begin to number our days, we immediately gain some wisdom and perspective. It's like, wait a minute. If I've got limited time, I can't spend my time doing that. I need to spend more time doing this. I need to spend no time doing this. I need to begin some time doing this. You know, so backing up for the entire passage, just kind of make a summary statement. For everything that Moses taught, here's kind of a summary of the whole thing. Remembering that our time is limited provides us with wisdom to know how to spend our limited time. I mean, doesn't it? See, I haven't taught you anything you didn't know. You think, I came all the way here. I showered and came dressed for this to tell me, by the way, your time is limited. Really? But when you really stop to think of it in God's perspective, that he's got all of the time from everlasting to everlasting, our time is limited, and it gives us the wisdom to think of, how should I spend my time? Here's it kind of personalized. This is just like, you know, first person. My time is limited, so I need to limit how I spend my time. See, when it comes to money, we understand this. I mean, sort of, most of us, right? Our money's limited, so, hey, when you run out of money, you can't spend anymore, right? We often forget that our time is limited. We're much more aware that our money's limited than we are that our time is limited sometimes. And we often forget that, you know. And now, I'm going to do you a huge, huge favor. Now, some of you are thinking, okay, now how much more time is this going to take? You're running out of time here. David, you're repeating yourself. Come on, let's get on with this. Maybe, are they going to do a closing song? Maybe I can skip out before the offering. I'm going to do you a huge favor. I'm going to do you a huge favor. I'm going to fast forward your life for you, okay? All right? Now, this might be a little sad for a few minutes. But I wanted to tell you about an Australian nurse by the name of Bronnie Ware. I don't know if you've ever heard of Bronnie. Bronnie works in hospice. She's a nurse in Australia and spends most of her time with men and women in their last 12 weeks of their life. She's not a believer, I know of, so this is a book that she had wrote an article, and she did some stuff online, but then she ended up writing the book. And she stays with these people right to the very, very end. And some time ago, she began to ask individuals some questions. And her questions led her to this book called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying, subtitled A Life Transformed by the Dearly Departing. And it's the result of her asking her patients this question: do you have any regrets? And if so, what were they? And she began, as you might imagine, to hear a pattern, and she wrote them down. So to kind of help us fast forward our lives, okay, we can't be 120 like Moses and then, you know, reminisce. Okay, we're not reminiscing here. We're just taking our lives forward to where these people are. And I want to share with you the top two regrets that people have within the last 12 weeks, or in most cases, sometimes last 12 days, last hours of their life. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you number two first. It's the one you might expect to be at the top. And that's why I'm giving to number two first. In all of her study, here's what she says. And if you're wondering, man, I'm just already frustrated that you're only giving two and not the five. Go on Amazon. Look at the chapter titles. It gives them all there. Okay. but the last three really aren't as significant as you'll see these two are. So the one we would have thought was number one, but it's actually number two, is what? I wish I hadn't worked so hard. You got it. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Nothing new there, huh? Oh, no surprise. How many times have we heard that? I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Here's what she says. And this is right from the book. This came from every male patient that I nursed. They missed their children's youth and their partner's companionship. Women also spoke of this regret, but as most were from an older generation, many of the female patients had not been breadwinners. All of the men I nursed deeply regretted spending so much of their lives on the treadmill of a work existence. You can thank me later for that, okay? There you have it. You know what that means, men. I mean, and women, but men, right? What does that mean? It means if we don't learn to number our days, we will misspend our time, and we will have in our life an avoidable regret. Because when we think we have all the time in the world with our kids or whatever, we have all the time in the world with our spouse, all the time in the world, whatever, when we suddenly realize we don't have all the time in the world, you can't go back. You only get to be 20 once. You only get to be 30 once. You only get to be 40 a couple times, right? And 50 perpetually. You can no, 20 once, 30 once, 40 once, 50. That's right? You just get that shot at that, and that's it. These are stages of life. You can't go back. You can't undo. And here's why this is so important. The people in the book, those were people who were numbering their days. See, you get to that point, and you've watched family members and friends, and I've watched a number of people that I love go through that, where it's just like, okay, this is it. The exact day, I don't know, but every day becomes important because they can't avoid any longer that their days are numbered. Here's the wisdom that suddenly they're confronted with. Now, before I show you the number one regret, if you're a teenager, if you're a college student, if you're a younger person, please tune into this. And you'll understand why in just a minute when I give it to you. This is extraordinary. And when we apply this spiritually, it's astounding. The number one regret across the board, she said, people said, I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. I was blown away by that. I did not expect that. That was a staggering thing to bump into. Here's what she said, right from the book. This was the most common regret of all. When people realize that their life is almost over and look back clearly on it, it's easy to see how many dreams have gone unfulfilled. Most people had not honored even half of their dreams and had to die knowing that it was due to the choices they had made or not made. Health brings a freedom. Check this out. Health brings a freedom very few realize until they no longer have it. Now see, I just did you a favor. Fast forward. We've been able to fast forward to that time when our time is limited, even though it is true now. You now know our days are numbered. So in light of our current pace, in light of our current schedule and our current spending and all of that, what do you have to do with that? Lord, give me the wisdom that comes from living as if our days are numbered, because God, they are. God, my time is limited, which means I need to limit how I spend my time. Now, I know the pushback. I get it. I'm not different from you. I struggle with all of this too. I mean, I just get to talk every week. You know, I understand what goes on in our head. It's this. Well, if I don't do all I can, if I don't do everything possible that I possibly can, what? I'll never make it, right? The question is, what's it? I'll never make it. You know, what's that? I mean, the people that Bronnie spent time with would say to us, hey, you better decide in advance what that it is. Because one day, you know, you're going to be looking at it. And if you're looking at the wrong it, that could be devastating. So let's be honest. I mean, we're too busy to think about, you know, it. But you better know what that is, you know. Now, let me tell you from where it came from. You say, Why weren't they living, you know, what they really wanted for themselves? Hey, it could come from parents. You know, think about it. You have parents who are massively successful, and you think, oh, wow, I'll never be them. Or maybe they were, you know, complete failures, and you're saying, oh, I don't want to be them. And then maybe they were right in the middle, and you go, wow, their lives are so boring. See, parents, what can you do, right? But here's another point. Oh, if I don't do everything that's possible, I'll fall behind. Fall behind who? Fall behind what? You say, fall behind this stack? Is that, you know? We should have an answer to that. Teach us, Lord, to number our days so that we can gain a heart of wisdom. Hey, if I don't do everything I can, if I don't push, and do everything possible, I'll be poor. Some of you, this is a reality. You say, going to be poor? Look at me. But, you know, we probably need to really define that. What does that mean? Well, that means I'm not going to be able to have a television in every single one of my rooms. Okay, maybe we should rethink. In America, we don't get that. Not that there's not poor people in America. There certainly are. But you want to see poor people, talk to Amy. She'll show you poor, and she'll show you happy poor, right, Amy? You know, people who have joy and yet have seemingly nothing. Now, I'm not saying sell your house, go build a hut, have a squatty potty. I'm not saying that. I don't even want to ask what that is, but because I have an idea. But most of us are so worried, I'm not going to have enough stuff. What, you know, teach us to number our days, Lord, so that we can gain a heart of wisdom. If I don't do as much as possible, I won't be accepted. Okay, now that might be more, we're thinking more academic, more accomplishments and so forth like that. Hey, I'm going to tell you, those of you who are younger, especially if you're a teenager, I'm going to tell you something. Your parents have told you this, but you don't pay attention to them anyway, so I'm going to tell you, all right? And here's the thing. You know all those people that you're working so hard to gain the acceptance from? In 10 years, you're not going to even know them. You're not going to have their cell phone number. In fact, you're not even going to have the same cell phone. You will have probably switched it out twice by then, okay? So now that's not the case of everybody. You say, well, I have some high school friends, but isn't that true? I mean, we worry so much about that. If I don't do as much as I possibly can, I won't measure up. Won't measure up to what or to who? Who's driving you? Is it possible that if you don't stop and think and answer some fundamental questions, you could get to the stage of your life where you begin to lose your health and you don't have any options? You don't really know what you are focusing on anyway? If you're a Christian, a follower of Jesus, if you believe there's a personal God who has a personal plan for your life, do you understand how extraordinary this is? Now, that point number one that Bronnie makes in her book. Here's the deal. It's not just a matter of pursue your dreams, do what feels good, you know, oh, you know, it's all about you. No. God has put you here for a purpose. God has a plan for your life. Do you think Amy's parents weren't nervous when she went her first trip or when Megan took her first? Do you think they weren't nervous? Of course they were nervous, but they knew God had ordered that for them. And unless she had said, look, I've got to pursue what God's calling me to do, she wouldn't have gone. Unless she had said that with my time, hey, what's next? Hey, we'll see what God says. My time is in your hands. You know, we're thinking, well, this is how I got to live my life. They're telling me how I live my life. People are, you know, influence, friends, culture, boss, all the, this is how you got to live your life. And God's going, no. Number your days. Live as if your days are numbered, because by doing so, you will gain a heart of wisdom. Now, I got to have a little homework, and I know we're out of time. But all you have to do is really write these four symbols there. And I'm not going to fill in anything, but I'm going to tell you. If you're married, have your spouse, you and your spouse do this, okay? Or if you have a good friend, or maybe even a boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. If you have a friend, maybe even a small group could do this. But think about for yourself, what do I need to add to my schedule, okay? In light of my days or number, what do I need to add, okay? Then you ask the question, what do I need to subtract? Now, I'm going to put you a little bit out of the box because you may not think about this. For some of you, this may be a person, okay? It's not your spouse, by the way. It's not, and it's not your kids, unless you're sending them off to college, okay? All right, so, but what I'm saying is, you know, there may be somebody in your life, and they're not a bad person. In fact, you even tell your parents, they're really nice. Yeah, we know they're really nice. But we see your life, you see your life is so consumed by this one person. Hey, if you're maybe married, you may be another couple. You just say, wow, there's just so much time we're spending, and they just drag so much time out of our daily lives. You know, it may be that. Hey, God loves them. They may be great people. They may even be Christians. But wow, it's just taking so much of my time. Then, getting on to bigger math, what do you need to do more of? And then, what do you need to do less of? It's not just a matter of, you know, I'll give you an example. I mean, a lot of us could say, you know, well, I probably should watch less TV. Okay? No, don't take every TV in your house, throw it away, and say, cursed you, you're possessed of the demon. No. But maybe we need to take a step back, okay? Maybe, you know, maybe whatever you do, whatever hobby, maybe going golfing every single day, maybe you need to back off a little bit, right? Maybe there's just a hobby, and I'm doing that because I don't golf very often, so I can pick on that. That's a great one. So, you know, right, yeah. No, you alternate golfing, fishing, golfing, fishing. That's the way you do it. Hey, your days are numbered, right? Come on now. I'm not picking on the retired people. I better go over here, or I won't get to go on my trip in August. You understand what I'm saying, right? Because there's things that I've got in my life that's just like, I just need to do a little bit less of those. And I'm not just talking about whining. I mean things in my schedule. I need to do a little bit less of, back off a little bit. See, my time is limited, and that means I need to limit what I do with my time. Now let me say this as I close. Our worship time, Amy's testimony reminded us of something very, very, very important. Not that just God created the universe and the expanse, that God's, you know, everlasting to everlasting. But because our time is limited here on earth, he gives us what feels like a very, very brief time to make our decision with regard to whether to be in his family or not. God doesn't force us. God does not say, contrary to popular opinion, according to Scripture, you're not coming back again to give it another shot. Once this life ends, once you take that last breath, God has given us our opportunity to be able to accept him for what he's done. Jesus, imagine this, God of the universe, limited himself, came down to earth, limited himself to time, 33 years. God in the flesh came, and Jesus gave himself, and he died for us, and he was buried, and he rose again. He experienced death for us, and then he rose from the dead so that we could, in our lifetime, accept him. That's why God gives us the time he gives us. That's why he gives us the breath he gives us, so that we can make that decision. And I know if Moses were here right now, he would say, do not delay this. Life goes quick. Moses, you're 120 years old. My wife's grandfather lived to be 105. And you know what? At 105, that's pretty close. He's getting up there close to Moses. Wow, I can't believe how fast it went. At his 105th birthday, he was like, I'm going for 110. Fact of the matter is we've got this time, and if you've never accepted Christ as your Savior, I'm not talking about being religious, join a church. I'm saying accepting that gift that God made available to you today. Today's urgent. I know you're breathing now. I know you're here now. I don't know about tomorrow. I hope all of you live to be 120. But God's got something for us right now. Let's bow.